Leftover lasagna.
Leftover lasagna.
Lasagna? No way.
It's a type of sandwich.
Some kind of gross pasta.
Leftover lasagna is a podcast by my church and Tony Uncle.
Leftover lasagna. Very funny name.
Hello, Tony. How are you doing?
Hi. Welcome back to you and to our listeners to episode 6 of Leftover Lasagna. Nitin, you've been on an elaborate break and you've forgotten everything about everything. You've forgotten how to use Zoom also, right? Now we are on a completely different platform.
Yay. So welcome to Riverside. We have now moved to Riverside. I don't know why all of this needs to be the podcast. But
here's what I wanted to say is that practically all of Europe or most of civilization actually is based on riversides, right? There will be a prominent river flowing through every city, right? We've just become a more cultured podcast now, or audio show or video show, which is now being built on a riverside as well. So tell us about the rivers of Europe.
So to give the listeners some more context, so we are now using this platform called Riverside. It's now a part of Spotify, I believe. And this seems to be like a great podcasting solution because it basically is a built-in recording solution as well as an editing solution. And it allows you to change layouts, etc.
So you're pushing the features of the app and, you know, trying to get people to use it. The reason I mentioned it is if we sound terrible on this episode, it is not our fault. We are not rusty. It is entirely Riverside's fault, right? So I was just giving a caveat.
It's true that all the great European cities, at least, have a river running through them. That's the original reason why people went and settled next to cities, right? Because source of water and hence source of food.
You should also mention Radiolab, where Latif Nasser had this amazing sort of insight about how the South of America usually primarily votes Republican, right? There is one swoosh where actually Democrats find sort of votes coming to them. And the reason for this actually is reverse, because you had sort of a reverse running through them, which meant that black soil was available, which meant that cotton was grown, which meant that you needed cheap labor, which meant that slaves were used, which meant that when they were along the river, along a swoosh on the southern side of the U.S., and when they were freed, they primarily obviously started voting Democrat. So, there you go. Which, incidentally, at some point is also when the city of Mumbai was built, right? Primarily on cotton. I think during one of the wars when you couldn't sort of have cotton coming out of the U.S. So,
Was it Battle of Plassey?
Has been Oh, man.
One of the enduring images for me from my holiday, which was very refreshing and fulfilling, I must say, was to see people in the city of Sevilla, right, in Spain, actually kayaking through the...
Do they have a sweet dessert called Sevilla Paisam there?
Sevilla jokes for later, man.
Sorry, from kayaking in the river, now you are yakking on the riverside. So this is the transformation. Nitin, I believe it was on episode 4 of Leftover Lasagna that you were talking about Amazon's amazing just walkout technology, right? And you had said two things. It is amazing. Yeah. It is a thing of the future. And that you don't know how it works, right?
Yeah.
Give us an update.
Just walkout technology was this new kind of point of sales payment mechanism that Amazon had come up with, where people with Amazon accounts who have topped up their Amazon Pay settings could just walk into a store, pick up whatever they wanted and walk straight out. They don't have to go to check out what they've carried. The cameras and whatever the AI tech inside the store is able to detect what products they picked up and bill them for it accordingly and deduct the money from their wallet. And I said it's pretty amazing. It's very futuristic and all of that. Since we said that, Amazon has actually sunsetted that feature completely. Something last week, just walkout has just walked out of the room. And not only that, they also revealed the high-end technology behind this entire operation was people in India sitting behind cameras, looking closely at what people were picking up from Asian stores and manually doing the whole thing. So it was not really artificial intelligence. It was very much manual intelligence.
Yeah.
AI is
anonymous
basically
Indians.
Anonymous Indians as opposed to artificial intelligence.
So it is basically Indians working offshore, looking at every single cart that is there, trying to identify items and bill people, and still not being able to attain accuracy, right? So this is a common trope, right? It is currently who can do the job cheaper, right? Which brings me to yet another thing that has happened in the podcasting world of India this week, which is that there's this person who interviewed someone who was an alleged fraudster. I believe his name in Tamil translates to anonymous asshole, right? Sutanjani, as you mentioned. And so the fun part...
No, so Ravi Sutanjani was the guest on the podcast. By the way, Anjani is not a word in Tamil. So Sutanjani would be a Tamil-Hindi portmanteau that has led to disastrous consequences. But Ravi is also son, right? So,
correct.
Ravi is son. So, Ravi Sutanjani is literally son that rises from the anonymous ass. So I don't know what that is. But Ravi Sutanjani is apparently a self-professed financial expert of some sort who was invited as a guest on a podcast hosted by Ravi Handa, who is popular on Twitter for having retired early.
So the reason that I mentioned it is that people who were following him basically said, you know, why are you doing this? You can't platform someone like this, a con artist or whatever. And he basically said, I'm doing it for the money. The sponsors paid me 15K, right? The irony in this already is that this is a man who's acquired enough wealth to retire early. And now he's sort of doing this. And a Twitter follower actually sort of transferred 15,000 rupees to him and said, now delete your tweets and don't release the podcast. And then our man was caught in a very weird position. But my point is, if Amazon was paying Indians so that they could do the job cheaper, I believe this is a good financial model for us, right? We don't need to be paid 15K to not release episodes. If you can pay us some token money, like 5,000 rupees, we would. We will not release the episode.
That's all it takes, guys. I've now launched or been part of what, 4 different podcasts. People are not sending me any money. I promise. I'll 5,000 rupees is all it takes. Even, I mean, 2,500. How low can we? 2,500.
It doesn't matter. Just pay us. We won't do the podcast. This is a workable model. Now we can jump
into the river. So, Tony, you inadvertently said something earlier in the piece, and I didn't know whether you said that intentionally in order to segue us into this week's podcast. You said, I've come back from cities with rivers running through them, and we've moved to Riverside, which makes us a more civilized platform. So, I want to ask you, why did you say that?
Because civilizations started on riversides. It's as simple as that, right?
Oh, something like that. Okay. No, I was indexing on the more civilized part. So.
Oh, like then, that. Oh, that. You're questioning what the word civilized actually means.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
That would be a good place to start right now, right? And the reason I ask that is, if you look at the world, if you look at history through slices of time, yes, you could point to certain times in our history where we were not civilized. And we are on the on a continuous progress of civilization, let's put it that way. But if you look at any point in time in history, and let's say now, right now, it would be dangerous to claim that certain parts of the world are more civilized than other parts of the world.
I will contextualize with a Twitter poll that I ran in your absence because I was bored and I was like sort of thinking aloud.
Things
right?
that you do in my absence to keep yourself entertained, Tony.
Correct. Which will die out first, right? Cigarette smoking around the world or all countries basically accepting that a health faucet or a bum spray, as it's more colloquially known, is much better than toilet paper, right? If you think about it, historically, you would assume that where civilization comes from, you know, a toilet paper might have seemed like a more civilized thing to do, which is absolutely blatantly false, right? If you have adequate running water, nothing cleans you better than water does. So yeah, which is more civilized? I would say we are way ahead in terms of having bum sprays.
So imagine these ancient civilizations that moved to the banks of rivers and did their business. And they looked around and wondered, what can we do? What can we do to now clean our bum? And they looked at the trees. And they thought, you know, maybe if I chop down these trees, I set up factories, I convert the barks of these trees into paper, I could use that to wipe my ass. As opposed to the flowing water right next to them. They could have just picked up in, you know, their hands.
Yeah.
And so it goes. I must say, one of the things I did miss during my trip was the bum spray indeed. Did you know that, by the way, now you have battery rechargeable portable bum sprays that are available on Amazon, which you could fill with 600 ml of water. I would actually have
Just walk out technology in a different way.
Just wash and walk out. I would actually be very worried with something with a limited capacity to do a job of this kind. Right? I would imagine I'm never going to be comfortable using that thing. There's always the threat of running out of water midway through a wash. Would make that entire thing. I need an endless reservoir of water on the other side. I'm not going to use all of it, but I need to know that if I need to
know.
To,
yeah.
Yeah, there is enough water.
It just reminds me of the other essential equipment on Indian trains, which used to be the lota or the magga or whatever you call it.
Oh, yeah.
Basically a big mug, which used chained to be chained to the... Because not only do you need water in such a situation, you
but the next person also needs water. Yeah.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, so what prompted this... conversation was some of the interesting things that we saw on Twitter, right? One was Botswana threatening to send 2,000 elephants to Germany.
20,000 elephants.
20,000 elephants to Germany. So yeah, now we can address the elephant in the room, right? which is basically that Germans were very offended that I believe elephants were being culled in Botswana, right? Because Botswana has done such a good job of conserving elephants that there are way too many of them. And Germany is like, how can you do this to an elephant? Like, it is unconscionable that you are actually sort of going after elephants and killing them, etc., etc. And the premier of Botswana was like, okay, why don't you have it then, right?
The context, of course, is that elephants are amongst the toughest animals to coexist with for human beings because they're incredibly powerful and extremely unpredictable. And I think in that Twitter thread itself, there were a few people who had replied with, videos, very ghastly, gory videos of people sitting in these jeeps in, jungle safaris in Africa, in Botswana, and getting attacked by elephants. And know that... You know, it's like Blair Witch Project. What we are looking at is basically, retrieved footage because the people who took that footage actually didn't make it through to the end of those videos. And poaching has always been a problem across Africa, in Botswana as well. They've obviously done a good job clamping down on that. But elephants over a period of time have come to associate human beings with potential aggressors, right? Which also makes them extra aggressive.
I wonder why.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder why. All of which makes it very tough to coexist with elephants, even if you have the most noble of intentions.
The intent was not to say that we want to send the elephants to you.
Yeah.
It was to point out that at the top layer, right? And since this is leftover lasagna and we're doing layers, at the top layer, obviously, it seems like how can you kill so many elephants, right? But the second layer being that your understanding of a certain population or nuance is very, very different if you've only grown up reading, European texts and consuming European culture and only being exposed to European ways of life, right? This is a very real threat, right? And in the final equation analysis, it always comes down to what is the best way for humans to coexist while causing sort of minimal damage to nature or not. But therefore, we have to prioritize our humans and therefore we have to cull certain elephant population, right? And this has actually come about because they did a very good job of actually conserving elephants. So
I think I would imagine that people in Europe have never actually lived close to elephants at all, except when they came over to Asia and Africa as conquistadors and then happened to experience life near elephants. But the other problem, and this is not so much at a country level, but at an individual level, right? When we see a headline of this kind, Botswana is going to cull elephants, we write an entire story in our mind without knowing the entire context, right? We assume, oh, these barbaric people, this indiscriminate destruction of nature over which we have absolutely no rights, etc., etc., right? And we somewhere deep in our mind, the image of you know, someone in Botswana actually going and killing these elephants is also of poachers with guns going and shooting down these elephants for nefarious gains, right? All of which is a story that we are building in our own mind and has absolutely no grounding on reality or the lived reality of how people came to that decision, right? That's also a problem. And it becomes very easy when you're sitting on the other side to come up with conclusions or come up with prescriptions in our own mind about what they are.
So another parallel here is that there was another sort of elephant-related incident, right, from Kerala, where a pregnant elephant actually died because of some kind of fire, not exactly a firecracker, right? It's a tool that people who, you know, live close to animals in Kerala use to protect themselves. And the elephant actually died, right? And this prompted outrage from everyone, including the likes of Virat Kohli, etc., etc. In what a slight whataboutry, is that you sort of asked, but there are so many other sort of human tragedies happening around India, all of which they are either not tweeting about or scared to tweet about. Similarly, sort of Germany speaking about this while Israel is conducting a genocide in Gaza, which they have no moral qualms in supporting, is also, you know, slightly interesting, right, as to how you react to what piece of news based on what you deem is acceptable and what your conditioning is, especially if the people that you are deriding do not share your same cultural context. It becomes much easier, I suppose.
There is an outstanding episode of the Radiolab known as the Rhino Hunter. I'll briefly tell you what that episode was about, right? As you can imagine, it was about rhino hunting, also in Africa. So it's about this person called Corey Knowlton, okay, who is actually a professional hunter. And generally, he goes as a guide on hunting trips, you know, where rich people pay him when they're going for hunting and in organized hunting activities, right? So in the country of Namibia, you have these very endangered species of rhinos called the black rhino, which is native to Namibia. I think there are very few of these black rhinos left in the world. The country released, basically auctioned out the opportunity for someone to pay to come and hunt one of the black rhinos, okay? And it was an open auction. And Corey Knowlton won that auction, right? So he bid $350,000 for a hunting trip to Namibia to go and shoot an endangered black rhino. And after this happened, he basically got doxed on social media. He got attacked by people from all over the world for being a cruel, heartless person, for embarking on this quest to go and kill, you know, one animal, paying so much money to, like you said, how much are you willing to pay me in order not to go and kill a black rhino? Interesting question to ask, right? There were death threats, rape threats aimed at his family members and so on and so forth. The Radiolab episode is about them going and catching up with this person and finding out about what actually happened. The story is very interesting. It's like this. So there are very few black rhinos that are available. They are obviously being poached and all of that. So there are all kinds of challenges in dealing with their population and ensuring that they don't go completely extinct. Once a black rhino reaches a certain age, right, actually become a drain on the entire population of black rhinos. Like they could actually go and attack other black rhinos. So having them alive is actually a problem. So what came up with as an idea was, in order to even fund black rhino conservation, was to actually auction out the opportunity to go and poach an old dying black rhino, right?
Oh, right. Okay.
And when
and use that money to
actually conserve. And and in fact, ever since this program started, the population of black rhinos has increased because they actually make enough money through these kinds of hunting trips to pay out everybody in the supply chain, all the way down to, you know, the poachers who potentially go after this endangered animal. Everyone else who depends on that for their livelihood. But the reason why this person, Corey Knowlton, even bid that amount of money was because he was told that this auction is going to happen, and we want to make sure that at least the base amount that somebody bids is a decent enough amount, so that then the auction can pick up, you know, there'll be richer people who come in, put a lot of money. And so he said, yes, I will gladly put in the base amount to kickstart this auction. So I don't know if you remember this Friends episode where Joey bids for a boat. And
the Mr. Beaumont.
The Mr. Beaumont, whatever, yeah. Basically, that happened here. So he put in 350,000 and he ended up winning the auction. Anyway, this episode is a fantastic masterpiece. It's called The Rhino Hunter.
I thought you were talking about our episode.
So Radiolab actually goes with this guy to Namibia, goes through the experience. They talk to multiple other people in the place, understand the lived reality of what exactly happens. And they all the way down to the actual kill itself, right? So actually Radiolab producers are sitting with him when he takes the gun out and shoots down this rhino and so on. But again, there are moral questions. Now, is it okay to kill one rhino, even if the reasons might be very noble and justifiable?
Correct.
There's another approach to take, you know, again, going back to elephants. So there was one intervention that was done a few years back. I don't know where exactly. This is mentioned in that podcast itself, where there was this organization that went and bought out all the ivory from poachers that they you know, collected over a period of time. And they set fire to the entire mountain of ivory that they collected. Hmm. And that mountain continued to burn for like 2 or 3 days. They created content out of the burning of this ivory, right? They took videos, etc., and posted those on social media.
Yeah.
Those videos went viral. You know, this is the amount of ivory that has been sort of illegally poached.
Yeah.
And obviously the symbolic act of destroying all that ivory to say that, you know, all of that is now gone for waste. This singular act of shooting this video, putting it out and giving it social traction ended up reducing poaching in that area by 90%.
Okay.
Right. Now, that's another way to deal with
it. No, I mean, to be honest, it sounds like a great story, but I worry about stories like this, right? Because... because... And then if you've like, you've not eliminated the demand for this thing, right? Obviously, this happens because the demand exists. And if you actually sort of reduce the supply, then the demand goes up.
This actually aimed at reducing the demand. Because if you see even Germany's reaction to Botswana's elephant thingy, it's because of a certain awareness that has now percolated to that part of the world about the problem of, you know, elephant poaching. By the way, a lot of the audience, a lot of the people who actually end up buying these hunting trips come from European countries.
Yeah, obviously.
And now it's become a thing where, you know, those sort of activities are looked down upon and stigmatized back in Germany and other countries in Europe. And this whole act of burning the ivory was similar to that. It was to kind of shame the developed world into saying this is the kind of waste that you guys are perpetrating and percolating, right? But anyway, the demand went down. Ultimately, the demand went down, and hence the supply went. Yeah.
Yeah. No. So, okay, just to sort of call out the layers, right? One is that we're saying that when this kind of news comes out, it's easy for us, including you and me, to judge, saying, you know, what nonsense is this? How can this be allowed to happen? Till you dig deeper and you find that there is a context and nuance, and maybe not everything that we get from Western media should be swallowed whole, right? And Western media, because primarily that's where all of our information comes from, right? We do this podcast in English at the end of the day. The second level, of course, is that don't think there is one objective truth to these things, right? Which is to say that... you know, we are not necessarily saying that killing elephants is better or killing rhinos is better. It is that both rhinos and elephants are, like most things, gray, right? But the third thing that I also want to say is that there is still comfortable hypocrisy around something like this, right? For instance, diamonds are still... diamonds are still acceptable, marketed, and... still sort of considered to be the true sign of love or how you should sort of propose to your girlfriend or whatever, right? It's what, 3 months salary or some benchmark like that they've set through marketing. And even though you can make much better stones artificially now in terms of whatever clarity, cut, caratage, all of that. And B, there is a lot of human cost involved in actual diamonds, again, which goes back to Africa itself and maybe Blood Diamond or any of those movies. You're still perfectly comfortable looking at diamond and thinking it's not a abomination on civilization or being civilized per se, right? So the hypocrisy still continues to stand.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned diamonds. There's this whole thing about chocolate as well, right? Which again comes from Africa. And that was a very interesting, very moving video where farmers in Congo, I think it's in Congo where some of the most high quality chocolate is grown. And the farmers who work or the laborers who work on those farms have actually never tasted chocolate, right? And it's extremely backbreaking, difficult work to cultivate chocolate in some very, very inhospitable weather. And those people are paid very little money for the work that they do. And there was this video where they were actually made to taste chocolate for the first time and capturing their reactions, right? And you can see, imagine the first time you ate chocolate, how you felt, right? So, and we all consume chocolate. I'm sure we don't spend a second thought about it. At least diamonds, you could say, some of us probably are priced out by diamonds or also feel they're not important. But
if our listeners pay us enough not to do podcasts, then maybe we can consider diamonds. But till that good day comes, I'm not buying a diamond.
Buy me a diamond.
This also happens in reverse. Not only does the other side of the river, right? We have crossed the bridge now, which is that so far we've been talking about things that, you sort of shame others for. Because maybe you don't have enough information or cultural context, or you've been fed a certain narrative. The reverse happens when actually, Western culture and by that extension of capitalism and big companies shame you into sort of feeling responsible for many things, right? The classic example is the personal carbon footprint, right?
Yeah.
Which is, the origin is just a PR campaign, which was run by British Petroleum, because they are actually causing so much damage to the environment, to say, is there a marketing way for us to shift blame from big corporations to making people think they are responsible for climate change, right? And I mean, obviously, it is a complete marketing gimmick. You can look it up. It is a PR campaign from Ogilvy. It is award-winning. And even the people who have conceived it have come out and said that, there is nothing to it except that it is a marketing gimmick, right? And the fact of the matter is that, you can feel good about conserving energy and not wasting water, etc. at a personal level. And by all means, we should, because, you need to aspire to probably being better every day, right? But however, there is no, no moral higher ground to this. Yeah. Actually, no practical purpose to this, right? In fact, it would probably be at the same level as voting to change democracy or something. Both are inherently useless activities, right?
Okay, so that was layer number two. And layer number three really is the condescension with which the Western world views, and the hypocrisy with which the Western world very often looks at the developing world. There was this photo on Twitter a couple of days back of the Marine Drive in Bombay, right? Beautiful sea-facing, the Queen's necklace, right? Where all those people are sitting on the small wall with their feet facing the ocean and just going about their business. And there are hawkers and there are those people who clean ears, right? Like that's something you see in Bombay. And those people who give you massages.
Detailed ear cleaning.
Detailed ear cleaning and people who give you massages. Everyone going about their business. Except behind the wall, there was this entire array of rubbish, right? Paper, garbage, everything just thrown around. Which is, again, sadly, a very Indian I would say an Indian kind of thing. Because I don't think it's something you see in most other even developing countries, that the levels of public cleanliness in India are pretty low, right? And it's something that I've often wondered. Why do people spit? Why do Indians specifically spit, right? And it's not just people who chew paan who spit, right? You go to any street side in India, in any part of the country, you will see people spitting, Right. Why do you spit?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a urine. You don't have to do it, right? Why do people urinate on streets is an entire separate podcast. It's something that I've always thought about, right? How do we manage our waste in general, not directly related to spitting itself? And how does the West manage its waste?
Here we will run into trouble because the question of population will come.
The problem is, I don't think it's entirely just down to population, right? It's down to a certain civic sense. The same reason why, I don't know.
I think you had mentioned in the same discussion.
People don't spit because of population, right?
In the same discussion, you had mentioned about how China has basically cleaned its air or done a thing where they've sort of asked people to behave better. Is that it? I mean, I don't think, again, I would want to live in a country where the government is telling me what to do. But it is an interesting sort of comparison, right?
Yeah, in fact, that's where I was coming from, right? So there is another video that went viral a few days back, which again features a Westerner who was a long-time visitor to China, apparently. And on his latest visit to China, he's walking through the streets of, I think, Shanghai. And he's sort of capturing what he's seeing and seeing how he's seen the city has changed since what it used to be. It used to be foggy and smoggy. The air was dirty. The water was dirty. People were littering everywhere. But now it's all clean. You know, things are better because they're getting their act together. Now, this video went viral and I shared it. I even tweeted it saying, hopefully someday someone will make a video like this about India. I got pushback from certain people, right? Even from our own friends saying, why is a Westerner's viewer, why is a Western person's view of, what a developed world should be like or what the developing world should change into or aspire to be? Why should that be our benchmark, really? Who are they to tell us that we have now got our act together and all of that? Fair question to ask and everything. Ultimately, fair question to ask and all that. But I think regardless of who's delivering the message, it's important to aspire for a better tomorrow. Right. Have you wondered what happens to the waste that is generated by the West? We don't see huge dumping yards, in Germany, for instance. Have you wondered what happens to the waste?
Isn't there some funda where other countries they're paid to take up their waste or something like that? Is that what you're going with?
That's exactly where I'm going, right? So, lots of
this
the
is
West...
the Amazon just walkout technology all over again, man. Like, outsource your pays for
exactly.
a cost.
Exactly. How much do I need to pay you to take my rubbish off my hands, right? The problem
this is also the same as the podcast being paid for not being done.
Yeah. around 2018... By the way, the countries like Vietnam and Thailand and even India, this entire supply chain of garbage export became massive in the year 2018 because that's the year China said they're not going to import garbage anymore. And you might wonder why China even originally got into this game, right? And China was massive in this, right? A lot of the world's garbage ended up in China because China, as we know, in the last 20, 30 years, have been, they've been very good at manufacturing, right? So a lot of products get manufactured in Shenzhen, Guangzhou, right? And other parts of China, which get sold for cheap in the West, right? So there used to be a lot of these ships, container ships, that would go from China all the way to the US, filled with products that would get exported to to America. And those ships would all have to come back empty from the US to China, right? And it made economic sense for China to fill them up with whatever they could get.
Right.
And they hence, and America had this huge problem of what do we do with all our garbage? We don't want our clean, beautiful, pristine country to be polluted, right? What do we do with it? And China was willing to take it, right?
So that's how all the superhero movies ended up in China from America. All the garbage.
Godzilla versus Kong coming to you in whatever. A container ship. But in 2018 or something, China said, we're not going to do this anymore. And and then suddenly there was this entire Southeast Asia, all the other countries suddenly became huge markets because China's not, it's not like, if anything, the amount of garbage that the West is generating has only gone up, right? And this also, by the way, is documented just like personal carbon footprint, the amount of meat, beef that is consumed by the average American is like 10x or 20x of what the average Asian consumes. They also generate a lot more waste, right? Because they consume a lot more. So, and they don't think twice about leaving a trail of plastic behind them. But all that used to go quietly to China, and now suddenly there is demand for them to go somewhere else, and they started going to Thailand, etc. They used to go to Turkey. Turkey became another one of these hubs for garbage export.
Nice.
So there were these 140 ships or 140 containers, okay, and carrying huge amounts of garbage from the great country of Germany that made it to Turkey. As those containers were reaching Turkey, Turkey changed their law and said, we are not going to import garbage anymore. And they refused to take those containers. And there are some of those containers still sitting in an abandoned sort of warehouse, and they're rotting, because the problem with this, there's an entire value chain of people involved here. Yeah. And what they actually do is they're trying to hide plastics, you know, microplastics and other single-use plastics, which really should not be used at all. By the way, you know what happens to these plastics once they come to Asia? It's not like these people recycle them, because they cannot be recycled. They're all mixed with other kind of garbage. It's all mixed plastic, right?
Right.
It's not properly segregated. They all end up getting burnt. And what happens when they get burnt? They go up and pollute the air, right? And what these countries don't realize is, yes, today they are polluting the air in China, or yesterday they were polluting the air in China. Day before yesterday, it was Turkey. Now it is whatever, Vietnam. Eventually, all this is going to seep into your atmosphere as well, regardless of which part of the world you live in, right? The one, one borders work very well as long as you draw them on land. Unfortunately, they don't apply above above the surface, right? But yeah, they all end up getting burnt. And after Turkey said, no, we won't take it, some of those containers were diverted, and people found that those ships actually showed up in Vietnam in order to get incinerated there. So it's very, it's very easy to take a moral high ground as a European nation or as a developed world and say, hey, these people don't know how to lead their lives. But a lot of the baggage that the developing world continues to carry, even now, continues to be inflicted upon it by the developed world, right? And not just during the centuries of colonization. In a sense, waste colonization is still, the actual word for this is waste colonization, by the way.
Right.
Continues to happen at a at an international scale. But
So
much for
My mind went immediately to, if the containers are just stuck, why don't they dump it into the sea, right? And so
that also happens, right? There was, there is this
discovered.
Entire, yeah,
it's called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is basically out there in the sea. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch, or Pacific Trash Vortex. 1.6 million square kilometers.
Yeah.
Consisting of 129,000 metric tons of plastic as of 2018.
It's scary. It's I mean, it's too late to kind of say what went wrong, etc. But we are sitting on a huge crisis when it comes to plastic and waste and pollution. But here we are. But this is the thing, right? We were talking about waste colonization. Some of the biggest problems facing the world right now is obviously the usage of fuels and climate change, right? Which, if you trace back, really started because of the Industrial Revolution.
Absolutely.
Most of climate change happened in those centuries, again, in the developed world, where lots of coal and lots of petroleum and lots of fuel was burnt.
So to throw it back to our pilot episode, all of this happened when we stopped becoming hunter-gatherers and decided to settle down and establish, by riversides, establishing civilizations, agriculture, and then Industrial Revolution. Yeah, cool.
Absolutely, right. And the developed world used that period very well to themselves, also by colonizing the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And have moved up the value chain now. Obviously, now they realize that the world is a really punctured and damaged place, and they're trying to change things. Or rather, they're at least paying lip service to trying to change things. The Chinas and Indias of the world are only now getting in on this train, right? But now is when the awareness has all come, and again, the civilized gaze is upon the on the developing world to say, hey, you can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
But that's how it goes, right? And this is where
which
the other video
to...
you shared comes in. Yeah. So tell us about that video. No, so this is a BBC video where a BBC journalist is interviewing the Prime Minister of Guyana, I believe, or the President of Guyana. But this is about oil exploration that's going on in Guyana. And the very condescending BBC journalist is asking the Premier of Guyana whether he's feeling any guilt about, you know, doing something or endorsing something such as oil exploration in such high quantities, which are going to obviously leave the area.
When the world is struggling with climate change, how dare you?
Let's take a big picture look at what's going on here. Over the next decade, two decades, it is expected that there will be $150 billion worth of oil and gas extracted off your coast. It's an extraordinary figure, but think of it in practical terms. That means, according to many experts, more than 2 billion tons of carbon emissions will come from your seabed, from those reserves, and be released into the atmosphere. I don't know if you, as a head of state, went to the COP in Dubai.
Let me stop you right there. Do you know that Guyana has a forest forever that is the size of England and Scotland combined? A forest that stores 19.5 gigatons of carbon? A forest that we have kept alive? A forest that we have kept alive.
Does that give you the right? Does that give you the right to release all of this carbon from...
Does that give you the right to lecture us on climate change? I am going to lecture you on climate change because we have kept this forest alive that stores 19.5 gigatons of carbon that you enjoy, that the world enjoy, that you don't pay us for, that you don't value, that you don't see a value in, that the people of Guyana has kept alive. Guess what? We have the lowest deforestation rate in the world. And guess what? Even with our greatest exploration of the oil and gas resource we have now, we will still be net zero. Guyana will still be net zero. With all our exploration, we'll still be net zero.
Powerful words, Mr. President.
I'm not completed as yet. I am not finished as yet. I am just not finished as yet. Because this is the hypocrisy that exists in the world. The world in the last 50 years has lost 65% of all its biodiversity. We have kept our biodiversity. Are you valuing it? Are you ready to pay for it? When is the developed world going to pay for it? Or are you in the pockets? Are you in the pockets of those who have damaged the environment? Are you in the pockets? Are you and your system in the pockets of those who destroyed the environment through the Industrial Revolution and now lecturing us? Are you in their pockets? Are you paid by them? Are you
all
paid
right,
to keep
right,
their message?
You know, and his response is one of the most, I'd say one of the most well-articulated sort of ripostes that that someone in that position could have given to a condescending journalist.
A riposte worthy of a repost, basically.
A riposte to the reporter worthy of a repost. Absolutely.
Yeah. Percy Spencer likes this.
Yeah, and it completely boils down to total lack of awareness, right? It was a good response to see. And let's also be honest, while Guyana in that sense probably is still carbon net neutral, a lot of the developing countries probably are not and will not be for the foreseeable future, right? Does that make them bad inherently? Or does that just is it just a quirk of time? And how does the world actually deal with this? We are now beyond the stage where individual countries can solve some of these issues, right? The only way to solve is by coming to a collective sort of decision-making. Finger-pointing is not going to get anybody anywhere.
I don't think the intent of this podcast is to solutionize at all, right? We're just saying that inherently...
Even if you pay us money, we don't have solutions.
There's a Western gaze to everything we look at, right? It informs more of our outlook about the world and everything else than we will be comfortable accepting in that sense. Right? Yeah, that is more of what we wanted to explore. In fact, if you think about something like, I don't know, Nitin, when we were growing up, I really would have wanted to be in marketing. I could argue that I've been for a part as well. Thought of marketing, you were looking at advertising. And primarily, you were thinking of classic ads that were in English, right?
Yeah.
Which inherently, if you think, is excluding the largest population of the market which it seeks to address, right? You assumed that people got the message because it was clever and like six men around you applauded you for a great line. But obviously, it wasn't, right? And I think a good way to see how much, it has shifted. Obviously, one is in how many ads now are more in local languages, hopefully. At least there is a different version of it for certain regions, not as much as we'd like it to be. But the other thing probably is which population is playing cricket right now, right? For instance, when cricket started out in India, it would have been dominated by a lot of Parsis, right? And disproportionately represented as opposed to the sliver of population that they occupied. As opposed to now, it is probably like a kid, you know, somewhere in the middle belt of North India or down south in Kerala, a girl from Wayanad who's making it to the Indian team, etc., going about it, right? So, yeah, that I just felt that's interesting in terms of how cultures take time to shift, but it is also essential.
So China had taken nearly half of the world's waste from 1992 till about 2018. And they banned waste imports in 2018. And after that, Vietnam and Turkey became the two of the biggest importers. Until Turkey said no. And that entire German consignment had to be sent back.
Right. Till it's Turkey threw in the towel.
Turkey towel joke. Even Vietnam, by the way, by 2025, they are going to completely stop imports of waste. I don't know where India is, but yeah, obviously, we have Viksit Bharat, so everything is going to be fine. By what, 2048? Is that when Modi is going to clean up this country? We just need to put up with stuff for another 23 years. No, no, it's fine. It's moving in the sense, yeah, I'm moved to know that there is a target. That sense,
Yeah. Putting the sit in Viksit, right? So just sit tight and wait for it to happen. So Nitin, I'm happy to inform you now that we've taken a break since the last episode. We've had over 100 listeners of the show, not counting the YouTube viewers, right? This is pretty cool. We've sort of found at least 100 people who are willing to listen to one episode. Now, the real key will be how many people listen to this episode or how many people offer to pay us for not doing this podcast at all. We also have 7 5-star ratings on Spotify. Thank you. We don't know how many likes, dislikes, but 5-star ratings keep them coming. Thank you so much for listening to Leftover Lasagna and supporting the show. If you think a friend can benefit from listening to this nonsense, please send it their way. Unless they're like China and refuse to accept garbage anymore, in which case, probably don't. Vietnam is where we are at, is it? We are looking for Vietnamese friends, basically.
We're looking for Vietnamese. At least till 2025, we want people to continue to listen to our podcast. After that, we'll find another country because Vietnam starts taking garbage in 2025.
So, Vietnam famously has Hanoi. We have Hanoi. So, Ho Chi Minh.
Minh. Okay, let Saigons be Saigons.
This is where Vietnamese soup makes an entry, which is pho, pho, pho.
If you like this podcast, get your friends to join along, Bay.
Oh, man. Putting the wit man in Vietnam.
Okay.
But thank you for putting up with us. Thanks. And Riverside, it's been a episode 6/7 of Leftover Lasagna, because we've done episode 0, which is a pilot, which we keep mentioning. We'll be back next week and we shall not take any breaks now till one of us is shifting or moving countries or going outside the borders of where we currently are. Let's keep it going.
Yes. See you all next week with another episode of Leftover Lasagna. Bye-bye.
Bye.